Hello everyone, and thanks for tuning in. Timothy, and in this talk we'll be going over the 2022 Emacs User Survey. Since this is the first time we're discussing this, we'll be going over the survey itself a bit, how it's being put together and run, and then we'll have a little taste of the results with more analysis to be published in the future. To start with though, a bit of background. So, in 2020, we had an Emacs user survey run by Adrian Brochard. Now, this is, to the best of my knowledge, the first time that a large-scale Emacs user survey has actually been run. About 7,000 people responded to the survey, so in many respects it was quite successful. And what's significant, I think, about this is that with this being the first time that a large-scale survey has been run, it actually provided some insight into questions about how the community is using Emacs that allow for much better guesses than just speculation based on the small number of people who respond on the mailing list usually. So, why are we doing another survey? Well, to start with, in order to get the most value out of an Emacs user survey, is quite helpful if the information in it is recent. Furthermore, we can actually get some more value if we can examine trends, shifts in the way that people are using Emacs, where the pain points lie, what people are enjoying the most, etc. So in both of these respects, it's to our benefit if the survey is actually a regular event instead of just something that's run once. Now, so with this in mind, that we ran the 2022 Emacs User Survey with the plan that this will actually become an annual event. In the design of the survey, there are a few goals here. The main one is of the use of the community. Now, use of the community is a rather nebulous phrase. In this case, what's meant in particular is value and questions, for example, things like pain points with Emacs, which versions people are using, which capabilities people are making the most use of, which could potentially be helpful to both Emacs developers, but also our collection of Emacs package maintainers and the broad community. And actually, I think going beyond just the packages, we've also got the people who develop tutorials, guides, and all of that sort of surrounding activity, which can benefit from a clearer understanding of how Emacs users use Emacs. Separately to that, I think, well, as part of the Emacs community myself, that it's rather interesting to see how other people are using Emacs and what their experience is. So yes, basically you've got utility and interest as the two separate driving factors. And as we're trying to pick questions which actually can give us a lot of this without taking up too much of the respondents' time. Now, last time in 2020, the Emacs survey that Adrian ran used, I think, Google Forms, if I recall correctly, with an option to send in responses manually. This worked, but it's not great, particularly given that this is for a survey being run in an ardently FOSS community. Ideally, we actually want to find a survey framework that respects the privacy of its users, is open source, ideally, free and open source, and is a relatively pleasant experience. Unfortunately, looking at available options, it seems that one always has to compromise on at least one, if not all, of those criteria, which is quite far from ideal. So, what's the obvious solution? Okay, we should just write a new survey framework. Obviously, this is easier said than done, but around a year ago, I actually started doing exactly this. I've used the programming language Julia quite a bit on a day-to-day basis, and there just so happens to be a web framework for that called Genie. So I thought I'd give it a shot, and well, here we are today. I ended up putting something together which could take a set of questions written in Julia, and using a survey library, actually parse that into a helpful structure, and then construct HTML forms based on that, and ingest results from the HTML forms, and just sort of handle that all together. Now, all of this ends up being fed into an SQLite DB, so everything's there, even past responses. One of the goals with the actual design of this has been to just minimize what's actually done on the client side. So that means JavaScript, cookies, the whole lot. Basically, as far as this could reasonably be taken, we've just got static HTML being shoved to the user, respondent rather, and then we just take an HTTP post request back and update the results that way. Now, by doing things like actually paging the survey, we can allow for incremental saving of results and a few other niceties, while essentially preserving an experience that doesn't really require any data of any particular capabilities, which is quite makes it sort of quite a nice, clean, minimal experience as far as I'm concerned. So, how does this actually look like in practice? Well, one of the nice things about this is because the question itself was written in Julia, we can get some nice features like custom validators and other fancy behavior, and directly specify how we actually want questions to be registered in the database. So here we have an example of two questions we had from this user survey. One is a multi-select, another one is just putting in the number of years people have used Emacs for. I think this gives a brief overview of the capabilities. One of the things I'd like to draw particular attention to here is in the multi-select, you'll see an array of options, some of which, the first one of which actually maps a different value to be stored for convenience. And then the final one is a special one, other. And you can see that's a bit different to the rest, which has got that colon function, it's a symbol, not a string. And this is quite a nice one because the way that this framework's been designed, when we have an other value like that, instead of it just being a sort of tick box other, it actually provides the option to write in your own different response to all of the above. Okay, so at the very end, we've now got a completely FOSS survey framework, rather nice. So the set of decent array of input types. It'd be nice to expand, but at the moment I think we could just about describe it as a rich set. Zero JavaScript required, but a little bit useful for progressive enhancement. As demonstrated, we can get some fancy validation going on. And then because we've got the results sort of tied into this quite nicely, we can actually have them available live and in quite the number of formats. I'm not sure how much you saw in the architecture diagram, but we've got all sorts of things here. CSV, TSV, plain text, JSON, just grab a copy of the SQLite database, but only the relevant bits, or something called GLD2, which preserves a lot of type information and a few other nice things. Now, what are we going to do going forward from here? Well, there are a few minor issues here. For example, there's a memory leak issue which is going on, resulting in the service being restarted, I think, every day or two while the survey was running. I actually have a suspicion that that's largely responsible for the about 1% of respondents, which is about 75 people, who described the survey experience as not great. Overall, though, the feedback has been quite positive. There's been some detailed written feedback, but just from the quick great, okay, not great options, we had about 2/3 of people saying that the user experience was great, which is really nice to hear for the first time being run. A few other things would be nice to add, for example, in future, control flow, and by this I mean the option to present different questions based on previous answers would be quite nice to streamline the experience. For example, having a set of questions for first-time respondents or people who are involved in the sort of packaging side of things, and without actually cluttering the experience for everybody else. That'd be quite nice. Further to this, all of this, I think on top of the standard web interface, it'd be quite nice to actually write a server API. And the particular reason why I mentioned this is because this could potentially allow for basically an Emacs survey package. I mean, we already use Emacs for so many things, might as well fill the survey out from within it as well. Okay, so this is how the survey is being conducted. Now, what do the responses look like? Now, this section I was actually hoping to get into some somewhat sophisticated analysis because there's quite a bit that you can dig out of the data responses that we've received. However, unfortunately, I've been much more limited on time than I'd hoped for, so that's going to have to come later. For now, we're just going to take a bit of a peek at some of the really basic analysis. Well, it's not even really analysis. Expect to see lots of pie charts, basically. But there's still a bit of interest there, so we'll go through a bit of that and just give a bit of a tease as to what might come in the future. So, to sum up for starters, we've had about 6,500 responses. It is worth noting about 1,000 of those are partial, so people who gave up on the survey partway through. Given that the 2020 survey had about 7,000 responses, I'd say we're basically on par here. This ran over a month, and interestingly, about half of these respondents did not participate in the 2020 survey. I think at this point it's not really clear what to make of that. There's been a 2-year gap between the surveys. It's been done, well, in method quite differently. And yes, it's not enough really to say. What could be interesting though is actually once this starts running regularly, we can see whether there's regular churn in the survey respondents, or if we have a sort of consistent core of people who respond each year, and then just people who sort of come by every now and then and go, sort of, oh, why not, I respond to this year's survey. But we're going to have to wait a bit to actually see how people treat the survey. Now, these responses came from quite a wide range of places. We've got 115 nations represented here, and collectively, the respondents spent about 1,000 hours giving us information. So I think, if nothing else, just from the effort that people have put into actually giving us useful data to work with, it's worth giving at least a good effort to actually trying to extract some value out of these responses. Now, overall, we found a lot of responses came from America, no surprises there, but as mentioned, with a good mix around the globe. Sort of the usual suspects for the rest of the responses, a whole bunch in Europe, a whole bunch around Asia, a bit in Australasia as well. And yes, there's sort of nothing particularly surprising here, sort of in line with expectations. What I find a bit more interesting though, is if we actually normalise the number of responses from each nation by the population of said nations, essentially giving a popularity of Emacs, or at least of Emacs survey respondents for each nation, we end up finding that Europe, particularly Scandinavia, becomes a bit of a hotspot. So I'm not sure what's going on in Sweden, Finland, and Norway, but it seems to be particularly popular around there. It's also worth noting that we now find that the proportion of respondents in countries like America, Canada, Australia, and most of Europe actually becomes quite comparable with each other, which is, yes, once again, sort of lines up with these responses, expectations from the last slide. Okay, getting into some of the other demographic information. Demographic information was new to this survey. In the 2020 survey, it was asked, people asked whether or not they, or what they would think of being asked about some demographic information in a future survey, and the overwhelming response is, sure, I don't really mind. And so that's what we've done here. One of the ones of somewhat interest is the age gender breakdown. So we expect Emacs to be used predominantly among people in software and programming. And within the industry, I think it's quite widely documented to have about a sort of 75-25% roughly split between male and female. Interestingly, in Emacs, it's a much more aggressively biased result. So we had about 96% of respondents are male, with just 4% for the rest. Interestingly though, if we look at the younger respondents, say for example under 25, we go from 96% male to 88%. So I'd say it's fair to say that the younger respondents are, in this respect, a somewhat more diverse group. Hopefully, as future surveys go on, we'll see this continue and not sort of die off to the sort of, well, at this point you're getting sort of more like 99% if you look at the older ages. We'll see. Occupations was an interesting slide as well, or interesting question as well. We've got the usual suspects here. I mean, it's a text editor, well, Lisp machine masquerading as a text editor, mainly used for programming. And so we expect lots of software development and that sort of thing. But that's only about just over half of the responses. We've got a huge chunk from academia, and then really just an odd bag of all sorts of other things, including things which you wouldn't really associate with programming and software at all. Things like creative writing, publishing, legal, And then you've got this chunk of other, which is, I think here, yes, is the fourth most popular option here. And what we have here is about 500 different responses from a huge range of activities. It's really quite interesting to read. Things like, I think we've got things like naval officer, and just it's all sorts of surprising occupations for Emacs. And I think this is a particular area just because I imagine compared to other code editors, sort of your VS Code, Vim and the like, that Emacs may have a particularly diverse set of industries, occupations represented in its users. Now, if you look at where the responses actually came from, we've got the usual suspects up top, Hacker News and r/Emacs, but then we actually get a much more graduated breakdown than in the 2020 survey. We do think familiar results here, like IRC, Telegram, Emacs, China, but now and Twitter. But now you've got a few new entries, things like the Pettyverse, Discourse, Matrix, which didn't pop up previously. So I think this is quite a nice sign in terms of actually hitting a sort of wide range of pockets of Emacs users across different platforms, which bodes well for the potential representativeness of this survey. Unsurprisingly, if we're talking about Emacs and particularly people who are quite engaged in it, which are the respondents to this survey, we find that we also get quite a high degree of care for free and open source software. So if you have a look here, only about a quarter of users didn't express a strong preference towards FOSS software. In fact, we had over a quarter saying that they would accept significant or even any compromise and to use a FOSS piece of software over a proprietary alternative, which, given the nature of Emacs, not terribly surprising, but a strong showing nonetheless. Now, let's start getting to things which actually useful for potential Emacs development and packaging. If you're thinking about supporting Emacs versions, it looks like you can do fantastically well in terms of hitting most users if you support Emacs 27+. That hits about 96% of respondents. Interestingly though, you can actually make an argument for being even more aggressive. I mean, if you have a look at Emacs 28+, that's still over 3/4 of the respondents. And we've got at this point a quarter using the unreleased head version, even though it's getting close to release. So yeah, obviously here, as stated, we're hitting a sort of more engaged with the community subset of Emacs users, but still, I think, isn't you see that with Emacs's increasingly frequent update schedule, that users are actually picking up those updates quite promptly as they roll out. Continuing on with how people actually use Emacs, languages. So we've got the usual suspects here. Lots of Python, quite a bit of JavaScript and C, lots of shell. What I find quite interesting though is if we actually bring in the 2020 Stack Overflow language usage survey data, and that sort of maps quite well to the array of language options we provided here. They had a general Lisp option, which I folded into Common Lisp since they listed Clojure separately, and I think that's seems like a fairly safe bet. But other than that, the only languages that we missed are, well, Scheme and eLisp. So what we can do is we can look at the relative popularity of different languages from our Emacs user survey compared to Stack Overflows. And what do we find? Well, Clojure and Common Lisp, far above the rest, I imagine in no small part due to the fantastic Slime and Cider packages. Following that, we see Haskell being particularly prominent, and then a collection of other languages, your Erlang, Elixir, Julia, Perl, and the rest. And then lastly, if we have a look at the ones which have significantly diminished popularity compared to Stack Overflow, we end up with, I think, what I could probably cast as sort of more enterprise-y languages. Things like C#, Java, TypeScript, and the like. So, that's interesting. Now, earlier when we were looking at the split of Emacs users, we found that we actually had a fair few in sort of more creative areas, like writing and publishing. So if looking at prose, we'd expect a decent chunk to be using Emacs frequently for prose, but it's actually more than just a little bit, it's a little slice. We've got a whopping about 1/3 of users saying they frequently use Emacs for writing prose. I'd imagine that the availability of things like org mode and org text probably help like this. Moving on to other packages, or more packages, we've actually got a very similar split here to the 2020 survey. Org has seen a bit of a growth in popularity. We've got some new arrivals here as well. For example, Vertigo has popped onto the scene and overtaken Ivy here, along with a few other new packages like Consult. Other than that, quite comparable. What's rather interesting though, I find here, is that when you have people who listed a small number of packages, they actually predominantly listed packages other than the sort of most common set. So if we have a look at people who only listed one package, basically, two-thirds of that, or three-quarters of those responses were saying other packages, despite the fact that overall, packages other than that highlighted selection here only constituted a quarter of responses. So there might be something a bit more to look at there. Now, when people are using packages, we also asked what types of documentation people would like to see more of on package readmes. And so basically we got a big mix here. It seems like generally people are interested in seeing more in various forms, whether it be tutorials, overviews, screenshots, comparisons, yeah, or clips and videos. So full readmes with a lot of context seem to be quite desirable from this. Now, moving forward, what are we going to do? So 800 people gave some detailed feedback on the survey. That's quite nice. I'm going to be taking a good read of all of those responses and using that to improve the process and also the set of questions. Now, all of you can also give some feedback on the questions, both that you found most useful in this survey, ones that you think might not add much value, and/or new questions that you think might be a good addition. Once I've done a bit more analysis, particularly the more sophisticated analysis which I'm planning, which will probably come out actually maybe in the first quarter of next year, we can see which questions there seem to have provided the most interesting or surprising results, and those are probably worth keeping. Lastly, once we actually have an API and potentially even an Emacs package, we could automate a large number of the questions, things like the Emacs version, set of packages used, and that could just streamline the experience of actually filling out the survey, make it a bit more frictionless. Now, talking of the selection of questions, a quick survey is a good survey. If we're asking people to dedicate their time to fill out this, it's good to try to get as much value without asking them to donate much of their time. How has the survey done in this respect? I'm actually fairly happy with how it's done. We get a few comments from the feedback saying that it was a bit on the long side, but the median time was about 12 minutes, which doesn't seem too bad, and most commonly we saw people completing it in about 8 minutes. For once per year survey, I think this seems fairly reasonable. Getting closer to a sort of 5 to 10 minute range would be nice, but this isn't far off. Lastly, we need to look at we're also going to be considering how long the survey is open for. So from the initial opening date, what we have here is a plot of the page which people ended up on and when they started the survey. So what we can see is a huge spike in the first few days. I've just realized that this plot is actually labeled incorrectly. Please disregard the minutes to complete survey. This should be days after survey opening that a response was actually submitted. And what we have here is, big spike of popularity in the first week basically, and then it trickles down to a fairly consistent level after that. I'm about to publish a last call for survey responses, so I'll see if any sort of final bump happens, but this indicates that we could probably actually just have the survey open for a week or two, and that should be sufficient. Alright, so what's the general plan going forward? Well, as stated earlier, the idea is to run this annually, and then consistently improve the questions, the experience, and the analysis that's done. This year has been the hardest by far, because a lot had to be set up from scratch. The hope is that moving on from here, a lot of it can be reused. For example, with my comments about more sophisticated analysis being down the line, once that's all worked out, as long as nothing changes too drastically, we should be able to reuse a lot of that work quite easily in future years. Alright, that's it for now. Hopefully you've found this an interesting peek into how the surveys operated and some of the initial results. And hopefully, I'll see you around next year for the 2023 survey. Thanks for listening.